So tonight I'm going to tell you a story. And I guess the main character you're going to think is Nolan, our older son. But I want you to remember that really the main character is God. And I just want to share with you how we went through this horrible, terrible, awful experience with our older son, Nolan. And God showed us a path. And he was so faithful to us. And he turned every single awful, horrible thing into something good. And actually, when you hear my story, you're going to be so surprised that I'm grateful for the experience. So I'll start with our scripture, Romans 8:28. And we know God causes everything to work together for good for those who love God and those who are called according to his purposes. According to his purpose for them, I'm sorry. Okay, so about me. I was born here in Lufkin 2 weeks before Jeff Childers was born here in Lufkin at the same hospital. I have a twin sister, but we didn't meet Jeff until 18 years later. We immediately moved to Nacogdoches. And I have an older sister and a little sister and a twin sister. So, and just a funny story about us, if I haven't told you this already, people call me Susie Lou. And so we're all Lou's. So there's Susie Lou, Kathy Lou, Cindy Lou, and Karen Lou. My mother's name was Linda Lou. Her mother's name was Mary Lou. It goes on and on. And there's Matilda and Lucille. I have nieces named Abby Lou and Emily Lou. And I have a little rival for a sister, and she and her daughter Louisa. So I'm hoping one day for a Mary Lou, but not for a long time for one of my boys. So we moved immediately to Nacogdoches right after we were born. And we lived there until the great divorce. Okay, Sheila, you talked about divorce last time, and my mom had an unwanted divorce as well. It was a horrible, terrible, awful divorce. The worst divorce you've ever heard of, we thought. I mean, you know, and our mom, I mean, she just, it was really traumatic and terrible for her. And you know, you never hear about people, today people don't say someone had a nervous breakdown, but she had a nervous breakdown, according to, what do they call that now? Anxiety attack? Anyway, they don't do that anymore, but it was hard for her, and she couldn't stay in Nacogdoches after the divorce. It seemed like my dad had kind of gotten by unscathed, and he immediately married, got a new family, and so we moved to Houston with our mom, and she went to work. Thank goodness she had a degree from SFA and was able to get a good job. And so we moved to Sugar Land, and Kathy and I started 7th grade at Sugar Land Middle School. And we went on to Clements High School, and then I went to college at Long Morris, and that's where I met Jeff. I saw him in history class, and I just thought, I like him. Is he? Went on to Texas A&M, and we married, and then moved back here to Lufkin so that he could go to SFA. So that's my story about how I grew up and everything. So we have two boys. Nolan is 25 and Graham is 17. And so when I talk to you guys, you guys know Graham, right? He's in the youth choir, he's in the youth. He's fun. This story is not about him. I want you to see him and point your finger at him. So this story is about Nolan and really about what God did in our lives with him. So, 2008, Nolan is in English class. We get a phone call from the school nurse saying that he is throwing up. And we're like, what? He's 15, 10th grade. And we're like, oh my goodness, how awful. So we went, Jeff went to go pick him up because he was in Lufkin. And the school nurse called back and said, you know, he's disoriented. And I said, well, you know, throwing up in English class, I guess that's why. But then she called back and said, you know, we think he's taken something. And we were like, what in the world? We can't even get him to swallow a pill, so what can he have taken? Well, in English class that day, he had bought 20 chloroquine pills, cough and cold medicine, and he had taken all of them on purpose so that he could get high, because someone told him it was good high, and it would last him through the day. We were horrified. I mean, we couldn't believe it. We picked him up, and I mean, you know, he was completely high. And Jeff and I have no idea what this looks like, because we never did that. And, I mean, he was just crazy acting, so we took him. photographer's office, and you never want to see Fadem this mad. So Dr. Fadem sent us to the ER. We had to take this charcoal stuff, but we had to sit there with him for a long time. And this stuff, it turned into the truth serum, okay? And so gently, we started asking him all kinds of questions about, like, why did you do this? What is happening? And so it turns out that he had been smoking marijuana and drinking alcohol for a year. I mean, he's 15, and he says that he started smoking marijuana the first day of ninth grade as a choice. He wanted to. He wanted to try it. And we were so horrified. I mean, Jack and I were just like, what in the world? We are good parents, okay? We go to church. We teach Sunday school. We have to be there every Sunday. And we know all of this further, and on, we are good parents. And this only happens to those other parents. You don't do the right thing, right? So, I mean, besides, it was so trashy. I mean, you know, we were just like on and on about just the whole thing was just so awful. So, that is when I decided I was going to save him, okay? And, you know, I'm a visual person, so we got home and I literally made this like sign thing. I drew his picture in the middle of it and I drew all these targets around him. And I was going to, I mean, I was literally the commander-in-chief of the war on drugs, okay? So I had these targets that were like punishment, torture, whatever else we could think of. I mean, it was just like, we are going to get to the bottom of this. And yes, I was praying for him, but I really was praying that God would just get behind me, okay? And that God would help me do what I needed to do because it was my job to save him, right? So this went on for probably a couple of years. Our house was just total dysfunction. I mean, it was horrible, awful. Can't believe I'm about to tell you this, but I mean, there was screaming, cussing, yelling, fighting all of the time, every single night. We just couldn't get to the bottom of it. We ended up having to go to truancy court, and this is a kid who had perfect attendance until, you know, the ninth grade. Just on and on. I mean, we had the police come to our house. We had just all kinds of this horrible, terrible. You get it. I can see from your faces. but I'm going to go even lower than that, okay? Because the worst thing that happened, and I asked Jeff, I could tell this. I can't believe he's letting me tell this. So Jeff is the man who, if we have an insect in the house, he will pick it up and take it outside, okay? So I start, one day, I get in my head that he needs to beat him. He needs, and that's what we haven't done. Jeff has not beat him. That's what he's done. So I'm screaming at Jeff. Oh, I don't feel bad at her laughing because, no, seriously, I bring him Jeff to go and just beat him. So Jeff ended up with a black eye that night. And it was not pretty. I mean, you know, it was like, we had no idea what to do with this kid, okay? So things were bad. Let's see. So then I thought, okay, we should go to a counselor. That's what we should do, a Christian counselor. So we found one and went to her office. And no one sits there just like this. You will not talk. You will not speak to her. And no one knows that counseling cost. So I was like, go to the waiting area, and I will talk to this lady. And you remember a few weeks ago, Martin preached and said, something about nothing is wrong with me? That's what I told this lady. I was like, nothing is wrong with me. I want to know how to save him. Okay, so we went about it, and, you know, we talked about him and some things we could do. And then I liked her, so I scheduled another appointment. And soon enough, she started figuring out that, yeah, I probably had some issues that I needed to work through with her. And so, one of the things that we started talking about was forgiveness. And, you know, I guess she had a way of, I've called her since then when I knew I was doing this. And I'm like, did you have like a breakdown? I mean, like, did you have some formula for how you got through to what was, you know, what was the root of my problem? But she didn't. She just talked to me and she knew that we had talked enough about my parents to know that I needed forgiveness. And that had grown up with this weird concept of forgiveness. Because in Shirley, we had an older cousin that would take us to church. But, so our mom didn't really go to church with us, but when we were in Houston, but We've got funerals, and occasionally when she'd be in service with us, and they would start coming up for forgiveness, and I would kind of look at her like, she needs to do this, I think. But maybe her thing is so big. Maybe there's things that are so big that you can't forgive. And so I just had kind of a warped view of forgiveness. So at this point, my mom had passed away. Oh, and so what she wanted me to do is, you know, they give us a homework assignment, okay? So she gave me this homework assignment to forgive. And, you know, anybody that I had that needed forgiving. And so I was like, my parents. So my mom had already passed away. She died of lung cancer in 2005. So I wrote her a letter and put it in an envelope, put it in a drawer, done. But my dad was still living. He hadn't ever asked for my forgiveness. And I thought, how am I going to go to him and forgive him for something he's not sorry for or whatever? And again, I still think he kind of got by without any problems. So I went to him, and I told my sister I was doing this. Oh, by the way, every time I left the counseling office, I would call my twin sister and say, we are so screwed up. Okay? And so she was kind of doing counseling with me, because I would tell her what she said, and then what she was going to do, but anyway, she had a lot of issues. So, anyway, it was just funny. So I told Kathy that I was doing this, and so Kathy's texting me, and I've done it while I'm at my dad's house, and I'm like, I'm not going to do it, it's not going to work out. But I found a time to do it, and so we were in the barn, and I said to him, you know, I want to talk to you. I just wanted to tell you that I want to ask for your forgiveness for being angry and bitter at you. And really, I forgot to tell you this part, my parents ruined every special occasion. I mean, just ruined it. I mean, we think about weddings and births and graduations and birthdays, they couldn't be in the same place together, so they ruined it if they were there together. They ruined it when they didn't invite one together. I mean, it's just like, I mean, that's just how it was. And sometimes I see these couples that are divorced and I see them at the same place, and I start to get nervous, I mean, for them because they're divorced, and I'm like, how are they here together? But anyway, so I told my dad, I want to ask for forgiveness. And he just said, no, I don't deserve your forgiveness. I can't. And he ended up telling me about the shame and guilt that he felt for all those years and that he wasn't any good for anybody, really, because, you know, he wasn't any good for this new family and he wasn't any good for us. And he couldn't accept it. And, you know, but I walked away feeling good about the forgiveness. I mean, that was my way of forgiving him. And so I went on and thought, I like this. I mean, you know, so I started to really make sure that forgiveness, I mean, I was quick to forgive. And today I am. I mean, you can wrong me, and I pretty much forgot about it real quick. So so back to Nolan, okay? The struggle to give him to God was so hard. I mean, and when it came to, like, obedience, I kind of felt like, okay, I was obedient. You know, I felt like I did this forgiveness work out of obedience, and so, but y'all, I left obey out of my vows. Okay, when I got married, I was like, I don't want to have any part of obedience. I mean, that's just old-fashioned. And so I just, this obey stuff was kind of weird for me, but I was learning about it. My mom, bless her heart, I did love her. I know I probably like her a lot, too, but she raised us to not trust men, period. You can never be in a man, you can never trust in him, he's going to you. And I mean, I kind of was, like, once Jeff and I had celebrated 17 years, I was like, okay, we're good. But we've been married 26 years now, so we're good. I feel like, I mean, my God. And his love. But so I started understanding that. So back to Nolan. to God. It was really hard for me. But I started trying to be obedient and started just little by little giving more of him to God than I had previously. So we're at a point now where he's a senior in high school, and it's the second semester. He's going to graduate, and we're just at our wit's end. We don't know what to do. All the signs are pointing to rehab, and we don't know. Jeff doesn't drink. I do a little bit, but we just never did drugs, and we just don't know anything about any of this. So we're just complete. It's all so foreign to us. So this rehab, so we went and visited a rehab and talked to them, and you know, it was like, oh, he qualifies? I mean, like, to your rehab program for addicts? And sure enough, he did. And so they took him. We worked with the counselors at the high school to make sure he was had enough points or credits to graduate, and he did. And so we pulled him out of high school 3 weeks early, missed graduation ceremonies, but we did that because we knew he needed it, and sent him to rehab. A place called Sundown Ranch. It's between Athens and Canton. Anyway. So it was a great place. We dropped off this sullen, angry kid, and a week later, that Saturday, every Saturday was family day, visitation, and had programs and slideshows and stuff. He hugged us. I mean, it was like, oh my gosh, we're coming. Like, this reconciliation has already started. I mean, you know, so it was the first hug that we've had from him in a long time. So, don't be crying. So he's in rehab, he's doing fine, we're coming every Saturday to hear these stories, and then all of a sudden, I start talking about sober living, and we're like, what? What is that? What are you talking about? We want our fresh, shiny, sparkly kid at the end of the summer home so he can go to college. I mean, that's what we do here. And then we're like, that's not the right plan for him. And so, sober living, I mean, what is that? What a halfway house was. I mean, you know, we're just like, so we went and visited a place, and I said to Jeff, okay, just let there be roaches on the walls, and then we just won't have to live in here. And so we get there. Well, the man looks just like Jeff's dad that owns the place. And so it's like, later, there were no roaches. And the guy said all the right things, and so I'm like, okay, that's what we're going to do. So we picked him up, like, 4th of July weekend was when he got out of rehab. He was released. But we got up, we drive him to Eden, Oklahoma, to, it's 8 hours away, to Van's house. And so the director told us that he would have all these rules, no girls, no phones, no music, all kinds of chores. And he was going to be living with these real addicts who were in recovery. He would go to AA every day. He would have to get a job, and he would have to pay his own rent. And no vehicle, no anything. So he did fine. He got a job at IHOP and walked there sometimes. And we missed him terribly, but we knew he was in the right place. So we're at Van's house, and he also told us, you won't see him. Sometimes men have to work on holidays, and so your son is a man. Like, he's not a man, he's barely just turned 18. So, but he was a man, so we couldn't see him. We probably couldn't see him for Thanksgiving and Christmas, so we didn't. So the rest of the story is just kind of back and forth. He is at Van's house for 4 months. He's doing great, but he calls us and says, I'm ready to go to college. I'm going to go to college. And we're like, yes, he wants to go to college. And so, despite the advice of Mr. Mann, we sent him to college. So we sent him to Long Morris, where Jeff and I had gone, my mom had gone, my sister, everybody. I knew the president, I knew everybody. Well, I'll be darned if Long Morris didn't close the end of that semester in May. That's the year Melvin shut Long Morris down. So he moved to Tyler. And he lived in Tyler, and he had a terrible, awful relapse. I mean, it just so happened, Jeff and I were in Haiti on a mission trip, And when we came home, we found out he'd been arrested for shoplifting. And I mean, like, shoplifting? But he was stealing, you know, two DVDs so he could buy a little bit of marijuana. And then he had a little bit of marijuana and he would get arrested. And he just got, every time, he just always got caught. And so he'd have just a little bit of marijuana, get, you know, arrested, and then he would get all these fines and tickets on his car that wasn't working right, and no insurance, and I mean, just racked up. And so he's in Tyler, and also we had told him, I forgot to tell this important part, we had said, Jeff kept saying to Nolan, you have what it takes. Okay, you have what it takes. That was just his mantra to him. Mine was, we will only support you in your healthy choices. So we will support you in your healthy choices. And so that's why college, you know, I was like, that's healthy? Yes, let's do it. But in his not healthy choices, we stuck to our boundaries. And so he was living with I don't know who, and he was doing I don't know what, but he was a grown up and we were not supporting him while he was in Tyler. So he calls us and says, I'm going to turn myself in and do what's called, there's a thing called sitting out your fines. And that means that you go to jail and you pay your fines off that way. Okay? Didn't know that. Still wasn't going to pay his fines. And so he did go to jail. He turned himself into the Smith County Jail. For some strange reason, I visited him there. And that is a whole other story. I won't even go into that. It was a horrible, terrible mistake. And it was not part of God's plan for me to go there. I can't think of anything good that happened from that visit. I left there screaming. I mean, just before the whole thing was over, I was just like, no. So he got out of jail, and he called us immediately and said, I want to go back to Van's house. Can you take me there? I've already called them. They'll take me back. We're like, yes. So we hop in the car one night, and we take him 8 hours again to Van's house. We drop him off. He belongs to Van's house and God. And that was, I mean, that was it. I mean, we were just like, what is going to happen with this kid? And so he spent a year there. He did great. He became a leader in the house. He had a job. He followed the rules. He did everything he was supposed to do. And when he left there, he knew it was time to leave, and he called us and said, okay, I'm going to move in with this man that I know from AA. He's got a room for rent. And I was still kind of like, who is this? What is this? You know, and he mentioned his name. His name's Aaron Schoed, and he has this duct cleaning business. And I'm right, Aaron, you know? And so as soon as we get on the phone, I'm Googling, who is Aaron Schoed duct cleaning in Oklahoma? His picture comes up. He's black. Okay, that's interesting. I mean, whatever. He's in his 60s. And I'm like, who is this guy? What does he want with my son? I mean, so let me tell you, y'all. I mean, this was all God's plan for him. This man, we love him. I love Aaron Schoed. He taught Nolan how to live sober more than anybody could. He was a former OU football player. Nolan loves sports, and he took him to an OU football game. He took him to basketball games in Oklahoma City. Whoever that is, who is that place? Thunder. Yes, he went to those games, and I mean, he was the coolest guy. And we got to meet him, and he taught him about finances. He taught him about love and understanding, and I mean, just taught him everything that we couldn't teach him. We were sitting at a table back there, and we were laughing. We were talking about that what they don't teach kids anymore. Well, they're all smoking pot. No, they're not all, but I mean, we couldn't teach him how to balance a checkbook or how to manage money. Because we were struggling with these other crazy things. So this man taught him all that. And one time I saw a picture on Facebook that Aaron had posted of them at Enid First United Methodist Church. And I talked to Nolan later and said, oh, you went to church. That's great. Is that Aaron's church? He said, no, Mom. He knew I was Methodist, so he took me there. I just thought, what? Who is this guy? So we love Aaron. Let's see, what else? So after he left, so he knew it was time to move on. After he'd stayed there for a year. At this point, he's like 24 or so. And he decides he wants to move back to Tyler. We were worried about that, but that's what he wanted to do. He couldn't get an apartment. Nobody would give him, nobody would lease him an apartment. We didn't co-sign for him, thank goodness. But he found a garage apartment that someone had, and he got a job, and he did pretty well. He did have what they call NAA slips, maybe one or two, but he got himself back up, and he was able to do good. And about that same time, I start going to Al-Anon. And you guys, if you have a loved one that is struggling with alcohol or drugs, or a parent, or anybody, go there. They're the most wonderful people. I went there to rule it out. I kind of thought everyone was going to be pitiful there and just cry and carry on. But they're the most wonderful people. It's the most wonderful program. I love it. And so that's where, I mean, that's kind of where we kind of flipped from this hatred and screaming and yelling to grace and love and understanding. So I'm almost finished. This time last year, or close to Easter, no one called and said, okay, this isn't working. I don't have any money. I can't pay my rent. Never ask us for money. He said, can I come home? Because I want to, I've been talking to this recruiter for the Navy, and I want to see if I can, I have some things I have to straighten out with him, but, and he needed to work out and lose weight and stuff. And so we said, yeah, come home if that's what you want to do. And so he talked to the same recruiter, and I didn't know if he was going to go through, but he finally, after explaining everything and telling them how far he'd come, he got into the Navy. And we're so proud of him. He's now in Misawa, Japan. And I talked to him recently, and he's talking about these kids. There are these kids that are like 18 that are going and fighting and getting in trouble, and he's just like, these kids. So, I told you I was grateful for lots of things, but I'm going to tell you a few things that I really, truly am grateful for the experience that we had with him. Our relationship is closer. Our relationship is restored, basically. So, one thing for sure, so 8-year-old Graham was sitting in that rehab listening to these presentations, and they had a slide presentation, and it was all about how drinking under the age of 21, overindulging in alcohol, leads to alcoholism. That's why, the drinking limit is 21. From that day forward, Graham said he would not touch alcohol until 21. And some of you may not realize it's not hard to do that this day and age. And so I've asked him, I ask him all the time, but I've asked him recently, like, you still not drinking any alcohol? I mean, like, you know, you're definitely still going to wait. And he's like, no, and beyond. He's like, beyond 21. So that's a major deal right there, okay? The other things were things like going from this unforgiveness life to forgiveness. And I mean, it's one of the 12 steps. Right, Victor? I mean, it is. It's like, I mean, you have to promptly forgive. I can't remember exactly what it is. Step 12. Let me see if it's on here. I can't remember. But anyway, you're supposed to forgive promptly. There's like four of those steps that have to do with forgiveness. So it's a big deal for you, for anything, for your relationship with God, with other people, everything. We went from ungrace to grace. We talked about unconditional love with both of them. And I ask them all the time, too, like, do you feel loved unconditionally? And they're like, yes, yes, yes. And you don't feel like there's anything we can do to make you not love? No, no, no. We went from broken to reconciled. I got to have a little bit better relationship with my dad before he passed away. I mean, just really out of obedience, I went and did things with him. And then, let's see. Oh, independence to dependence. I mean, I'm probably never going to obey Jeff, but I definitely have a dependence on God. I mean, I'm never going to ask God to get behind me. I hope y'all knew that that was, like, not the right thing to do. You know, I want to be in his, I want to do what God wants me to do. And I pray that you know, he will send me where he wants me to work and what he wants me to do. So that's all I have. Thank you. Y'all have any questions?